Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
So, did you see that little story in the paper here? Van Dyke formally resigns from CPD. I'm reading from the Chicago Sun Crimes. Jason Van Dyke, who was convicted last year of murdering Laquan McDonald in an on-duty shooting, has resigned from the Chicago Police Department. He's serving a nearly seven-year prison sentence for second-degree murder. Formally resigned last week, according to a spokesperson. Comes just under 5 years from the date he fired 16 shots at the 17-year-old McDonald. Do we all remember that story? Do you realize that was now 5 years ago? Van Dyke, who was on the force for 18 years, will not collect a pension. His attorney's on a phone line. I got a couple questions for Dan Herbert. Hi, Dan. This is John Williams. Thanks for joining us on WGN. How are you?
Good, John. How are you?
Good. All of that's correct, as I just read it out of the paper, was it?
Yeah, that's correct.
Andy Grimm's reporting in the Sun-Times today. So was that ever in question or in doubt? Would he get a pension or not? How does that work?
No, it's per the statute, if a police officer is convicted of a felony in relation to his or her duties, then they do not receive a pension. This, obviously, he was convicted of a felony, and a little argument could be made that it was part of his duties.
I suppose most people would say, well, gee, in this case, that's just, but that's too bad for his wife and kids then, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's something that, you know, we literally talked about even before the indictment came down. It, you know, they're hurting financially. There's no question about that. But it's not a blow to them in any way, shape, or form, because it was something that, you know, we knew.
They knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, even if we got not guilty. I mean, it was, they were going to fire him. I mean, that would have changed the pension situation, but, you know, he didn't have so much time on that it would have been really impactful.
Oh, I see. So it's not like he was sitting on, how long was he on the force, did it say?
I think he was, God, I've gotten away from the case. I think it was 13, 14 years. So
yeah.
He would have collected an annuity, which, you know, would have been probably $600 a month.
Is his wife working then?
She is, yeah.
So that's how, I don't know if she was working before, but she's the breadwinner for the family now, right?
She is the sole breadwinner.
Yeah, right. And then if it says, I don't know why that was a story, Van Dyke formally resigns. So even as he's been sitting incarceration in prison, he was a Chicago police officer last week?
I guess it depends on your characterization. I mean, he was, the day he was indicted, he was put into a no-pay status. So so essentially, you know, he is, I guess, technically he would be required to follow the rules and regulations of the police department while in a no-pay status. But other than that, there's really no difference between his position now and then.
What is the family like? What is he like? How, now that the sort of dust is settled on all of this, what would you say about them?
They're very strong, and they don't have that defeatist attitude. You know, it's, I've never once heard, you know, woe was me, or they understand the gravity of the situation, and they are doing everything they can to make the best out of what they hope will be a decent rest of their lives and their kids' lives.
Yeah, if it's a seven-year sentence, he gets out in 6 years? Do you know offhand?
No, he could be out quite a bit sooner than that. You know, it's at 50% time, and he could be out as early as 2022.
So they must feel, as a family, pretty fortunate about that, right?
Yeah, I said after the sentence, you know, as hard as it was, you know, they, when they were looking at a death sentence, they were, you know, so happy just to know that they're going to have a chance to get their family back together. So, yeah, it's hard, but, you know, they're looking forward to the future, and they're really actually pretty positive people.
I wonder, you know, I think a lot of people listening to this, I'm just asking you questions about the situation. I'm not taking a side. In fact, I think that he's fortunate to get a sentence that is as easy as that is for him and his family. And I'm still pretty upset with how the Chicago Police Department handled this case overall. I don't know if he or you have anything to say about that, but I think what bothers us is not just the mistake that he made that day, but the cover-up that the police department was involved in.
Yeah, I would say to the cover-up, you know, that the focus and the main thrust of the cover-up was that the detectives did a cover-up, and I think that's really been proven as a false narrative. If there was a cover-up here, it was done by the politicians to keep this tape from coming out. But the detectives, and I know it makes for a good story, but the reality is they would not try and cover this thing up because they knew that this tape was existed. I mean, they did what they normally do, and they, you know, accentuate the positives and downplay the negatives, but it wasn't in any way to cover anything up because they don't have control about the release of the videotape. So these lowly detectives, and I don't mean that derogatory, but, you know, they assume that it's going to get out, you know, in short time. But it was the supervisors and the politicians who did everything in their powers to keep this tape from coming out.
But that's not the way I remember it, Dan. I mean, they didn't see, they did not know that the tape would be released, but for a year. And
well, the detectives had no, they have no control over that. I mean, you know, that's way, way above their pay grade. They have nothing, they inventory it, and once it gets inventoried, it's out of their hands.
Well, I think the general consensus, this isn't why I called, but we're just having a conversation here. I think the consensus in Chicago is that police officers wrote reports that weren't entirely accurate to better help your client.
Yeah, I would agree that that is definitely a consensus, and I would agree that there was some things put in the report that absolutely should not have been put in reports. But I don't think it was in an effort I'm not going to say I don't think. I know this situation pretty well, and I know some of the people involved, and they were not trying to cover anything up as much as they were trying to, you know, make it a good shooting. And, you know, I guess if people want to characterize that as a cover up, so be it. But I just, you know, there's nothing to cover up here because the whole thing was caught on videotape. So their intentions, I don't believe, were cover up. It was simply to make the shooting as good as they possibly can, which unfortunately was the policy and practice during that time.
Have things changed?
I think everything has changed as a result of this case. I know, you know, I had already talked to detectives prior to this and said, you know, my humble opinion is, you know, forget about this. It's just accentuating the positives. Just report the facts. You know, they were trying to almost be too good at their jobs and to and to thwart, like, civil suits and defenses. And, you know, that's not their role.
Dan, you sound like you're still working for them. I mean, it seems to me like they never thought that that video was going to go public. And we never would have seen it but for one enterprising reporter who said, something doesn't smell right here. Let's see if we can find the video. And over a year later, it was released. The police officers wrote reports that were just not accurate. And there was never going to be any video to prove otherwise. Your client is a free man. But for the release of that video, because the reports would not have put him in jail.
Yeah, I agree with the latter point. But, you know, and I understand there's been so much written that it's impossible for a lot of people to think otherwise, that it's a cover-up. But, you know, this videotape, it would have been released at the very least to the Independent Police Review Agency, and that would have been a part. It was released to the state's attorneys, to the federal government, to the Independent Police Review Agency. So, you know, policemen have no idea what's going to happen with the video once it's in everyone else. Once they inventory it, they know it's going to these various entities. So, you know, I really don't think it's true to say that they thought, you know, this thing would have been buried until after all these civil suits and criminal cases took place.
I really don't. I think this should happen going forward. Maybe you do agree with me on this, that the police should have to write those reports without consulting with each other right away. They shouldn't get 24 hours. They shouldn't be able to sort of put their heads together and say, okay. I mean, I can see the value in that, but I think that's been abused. I think they need to tell their version of the events so that if we get conflicting versions, then we'll know something's afoot. But if they all get together and write the same report, well, then to me, that's an opportunity for some sort of fraudulent reporting.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you on that. The only thing I would take issue with is the giving them time to write the reports. With respect to the shooting officers, you know, it's science. It's well documented, and it's been scientifically accepted that the effects on the body after somebody was involved in that traumatic situation make it 100% impossible for them to give an accurate statement until they get two full cycles of sleep. And the police, Chicago police, get I believe it's 24 hours before a shooter makes a statement. You know, the federal government, who is extremely progressive, as we all know, they give their agents 72 hours. So if the goal here is to get an accurate statement, then I think that that they should give the time, because it's been proven you will not get an accurate statement.
Dan Herbert's on the line, Jason Van Dyke's attorney. We just noticed the story, maybe you did too, that Van Dyke, quote-unquote, formally has resigned from the CPD. He has not been getting paid, and he will not get his pension. Folks are asking questions like, what happens to the money that he paid into the pension for the last 18 years? Do you know that one, Dan? What happens to all of that?
Yeah, that money is his, and he will get that. But that is it, and I think they give him a real small interest percentage on that.
Somebody else wanted to know, well, I'll just let him ask a question here real quick, and then we'll wrap this up. And that's Ralph on line one. Hey, Ralph, you're on WGN. What's up, Ralph?
Hey, guys, thanks for taking my call. I just want to know if there's somewhere where I could send in a donation to help out the Van Dyke family. Regardless of whether if it was right or wrong, the guy needs help. And, Dan, my question for you is, as a third-generation policeman, why didn't you have a defense of mental illness? Because those of us who have been police officers know how stressful the job is, and sometimes you do the wrong thing because you're under such pressure and stress. I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks for the phone call.
Yeah, thanks, Ralph. As far as donations, I don't know. There was a GoFundMe page. I don't know if that's active, but you could send it anything to my office, and I will make sure that I get it to the family and 206 South Jefferson. With respect to your last question, we did essentially present not necessarily a mental defect that would render him not guilty of having the mental state, but it was a diminished capacity, and and that was based upon all the physiological aspects that were going on with his body during this incident, but there was not evidence to support a legally insane defense.
I think Chicagoans are going to talk about this case for a long time to come. Dan Herbert was Jason Van Dyke's attorney. I appreciate your time today. It's just kind of a lingering question when you saw that story. You know what I mean, Dan? You say, wait a minute, he just now resigned. He's been in jail. But this clears up some of that for us. So technically, he's no longer on the force. He had not been getting paid. He will not get a pension, correct?
Correct.
I appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us today.
All right, John. Take care.
Yep. Dan Herbert.